Hey, folks, thanks for tuning back into the Eye on College Football podcast here on CBSSports.com. I am your host, Chip Patterson, and we are coming to the end of our What Went Right, What Went Wrong 2012 review series. In today's podcast, we get to take a look back at the mighty Pac-12. And so joining me to break down the Pac-12 and the season that was is Mr. Chris Houston. Chris, thanks so much for joining me.
Hey, thanks for having me, Chip. It's interesting to hear the Pac-12 being referred to as mighty. You don't hear that much, but maybe with those two extra teams, maybe it's getting mightier.
Yeah, and you've also got two teams in the BCS bowls, Stanford and Oregon. At the end of the season, two of the best five or six teams in the country. I think all in all, you can see the Pac-12, especially with Washington, UCLA, don't you feel like outside of maybe obviously the USC, things seem to be on an upward trajectory for the league as a whole?
Yeah, I really think so. I think there's generally a lot of improvement across the board. I think you're seeing a lot of pretty good coaches coming into the league. It's ironic you mentioned USC, which arguably has the worst coach in the league in Lane Kiffin. But then you have the Arizona's improving with Rich Rodriguez and Todd Graham. Even Colorado had a great hire by hiring San Jose State's coach, and Utah has a coach who went undefeated. And the Washington State still has Mike Leach, who's proven. And, of course, California went and got Sonny Dyke. So I think those are all upgrades at those spots, and I think this will pay dividends for the league as they start to build their systems and get used to where they are.
Right, and a lot of these coaches that you mentioned, especially Dykes, and then as Rich Rodriguez comes in there, a lot of coaches, Mike Leach, all coaches that are well known for being fantastic football minds. And so, if you think that teams that took a step forward, Arizona State, both with 8 wins on the season, as everything starts to work through and you get a couple years into it, you got to think that they'll be at least challenging some of the teams at the top of the division.
Yeah, I think so. I think, especially we saw a little bit of that last year. Even I think with Arizona, their record didn't indicate how well they played for much of the year because they lost a lot of close games. They gave Stanford a real tough battle. They obviously beat USC at home. Teams like UCLA, just in their first year under Jim Mora Jr., really competed well against some pretty good teams, even when they lost. Especially with Stanford at the end, they could have been the team in the Rose Bowl. There were some huge turnarounds for some teams. Oregon State with another rebounding season. Mike Riley just never wants to go away. Just when you think he's down and out, he comes back with a good season. And really, the only teams that really need to kind of get their act together at this point are USC, but you always feel that because of their talent level, they're just, a few twists and turns away from doing that. Washington, which is recruiting really well, but can't seem to kind of get over the hump with Sarkisian. And then, the kind of standard situation at Colorado, going from John Embry, finally getting rid of him, after, not very many seasons. But I think a change was definitely needed there. I think you're looking at a conference that is kind of generally increasing their quality. I think it starts with the coaching.
We're going to go ahead and jump into the what went right, what went wrong sort of portion of our program. And we're going to start right there with Stanford. Stanford finished with a Rose Bowl victory. They beat UCLA 2 weeks in a row, first at UCLA, then getting to host the Pac-12 championship game, and all that sort of stemming from this momentum that was built as they knocked off Oregon State, who was just on the outside of the top 10 at the time, then go into Eugene and beat Oregon 17-14 in overtime. Fantastic finish. It was 8 straight wins to close the season after the overtime loss at Notre Dame with that controversial call. All in all, great season. Another great step forward as David Shaw sort of settles in, not as a replacement, but it feels like he's almost continuing to add to everything that was built at Stanford. Let's start with what went right for the Cardinal this season as, you know, they sort of usher in a new era of Cardinal football.
Well, I think that this was supposed to be a rebuilding year. Some people thought it would be a rebuilding year, losing Andrew Luck. And I think that the approach that David Shaw took to rebuilding was a very unique approach, or I should say a very successful approach that wasn't necessarily what you see in football. Usually when you go with a new quarterback, which they did with Josh Nunez, you see teams stick with that guy, and they kind of hope they develop over time. And if you look at what Stanford looked like earlier in their season, maybe through the first six or seven games, they were 5-2 through their first seven games. And it looked like, you know, this was a team that was a good team, but they just weren't the same on offense. They weren't as dynamic as they were outside of a 54-point outing against Arizona. They had a really hard time scoring points. They were upset by Washington 17-13, and of course, they only scored 13 against Notre Dame and couldn't punch it in at the end. So there was some real anemicness going on with the offense. And this is where Shaw kind of got did what a lot of coaches feared. This is what separates him from just being a guy that was, you know, promoted from within, for lack of a better reason, to replace Jim Harbaugh. And that is that he saw that, hey, here's this freshman quarterback, Kevin Hogan, who is looking really good in practice and is developing and learning the system. And we've got a situation playing Colorado where we're going to give him some reps and see how he does and really give him a chance to take over the job. And, of course, when you play Colorado, that's a situation where it makes it harder to fail. And so they got him ready against Colorado. Hogan came out, played very well against Colorado, both passing the ball and running the ball. And this was where the team really took off. The team responded to his style, which is really a lot like Andrew Luck's style, both in his ability to be really accurate and also to move the ball. He reminded you a lot of Andrew Luck as a freshman. And so from that point on, they just really came to life offensively. And I think the defense kind of responded as well. And you saw that when they played Oregon and beat them 17-14 up in Eugene. You know, the defense had always been good, but once that offense got going, or at least showed a proficiency or ability to move the ball with efficiency, I think it gave the defense a lot more confidence, and you know, maybe a lot less was riding on their shoulders at that point. So I think that really keyed them. And if you look at it, had they beaten Washington, had Washington not beaten them in the last few minutes, they would have been in the BCS title game probably.
Now, what would you say, outside of maybe the Washington game, what was one thing in general that did not necessarily go as planned for Stanford or an area of improvement moving forward to 2013?
Well, as much as I praise Shaw for not having or for having the balls to replace Nunez midseason, I think you have to wonder why Hogan wasn't in there sooner, considering how good he looked. Had he been in there either against Washington or against Notre Dame, it's not hard to imagine him eking out the win, or at least even if he hadn't been playing maybe in goal line situations with his ability to scramble and move the ball with his feet. You have to wonder where he was. You can't have your system be so complicated and such an onerous burden on your players that you're hurting the team, and I think that Kevin Hogan is clearly, I think, way more talented than Josh Nunez and possibly a first-round pick in the future. And to have this guy sitting on the bench for the first seven games of the year is a bit of a quizzical decision. So I think at the same time, it was against the usual flow of things to put him in there in the middle of the season, but at the same time, he probably should have been there in the first place.
Now moving on to the Oregon Ducks, who fell one overtime loss short of also a national championship game appearance. The only loss on the season, when looking back, is that 17-14 overtime loss to Stanford. They finish averaging almost 50 points per game of offense, over 300 rushing yards per game. Great. I mean, it seems disappointing because a lot of people wanted so badly to see this particular Oregon team, especially with Marcus Mariota, to see if they could challenge an Alabama or a Notre Dame, or to see that on the field, but it didn't come to be. So let's start with the positive. What, in your eyes, made this team a little bit better, almost, it seemed to me, than some of the previous teams that Chip Kelly has taken to BCS bowl games?
I think the big difference for Oregon this year was the development of Marcus Mariota. He's sort of a different level quarterback than they've had in the past. You've had Jeremiah Mazzoli, who was a great runner, but undersized and not a consistent passer. And you had Darren Thomas, I think, who was a decent passer, had a funky throwing motion, wasn't a great runner. I think he was didn't have a lot of heart and wasn't the kind of guy who can get Oregon to the next level. But I think Mariota is the best combination of all the guys they've had, and I think he's more the ideal fit for that offense. And I think when you combine what Mariota was for the Ducks this year and the fact that they're starting to get more and more talent on the defensive side of the ball, and I think they're kind of making baby steps defensively and becoming a better unit there, I think the combination of the improved defense and just the emergence of Mariota as a current star and a future star is what really went right for the Ducks this year.
And then, in the Stanford game, there was obviously a few things that did not go their way, taking care of the ball. But what, in general, do you think the Ducks could have improved on this year, putting on some hindsight glasses that are better than 2020?
You know, this is ironic because this is such a creative offense, but I feel like that DeAnthony Thomas really wasn't used correctly. And you could, you know, maybe you could see a sign of that in that Marcus Mariota run where he misses the block. Something about him just seemed kind of out of sync for much of the year, and he never really got on track against great competition. And maybe if he had gotten on track against some of these teams, then maybe that Stanford game would have turned out differently. It's just that, you know, I think that he's an incredible player. I think that they just need to find a way to get him uncorked.
From moving from the Ducks to the Beavers, what about Oregon State season sticks out to you? Because there was, you know, the moment where it looked like it was going to, you know, possibly come down to the Civil War. The Beavers come up with just a couple big wins there in a row. Ultimately, after they fall at Stanford, they lose to Oregon, and sort of it really goes back to, I guess, that Washington loss. Again, Washington, knock off Stanford, knock off Oregon State, two great wins, but the inconsistency you've already mentioned, you know, they kept out of the place. They sort of fell out of the race just a little bit. Excuse me. What sticks out to you that went right for Mike Riley's squad?
Well, I think it was really cool how they developed not only one of the best receiving duos in the country in Marcus Wheaton and Brandon Cooks, but also just the kind of the resiliency of the offense, even despite losing Sean Mannion to an injury and then coming back with Cody Vaz, and he was just as good, if not better. I think developing those two guys and kind of getting through the adversity of those injuries, now they did, you know, they did kind of stumble toward the end. They went 3-4 toward the last seven, but some of those losses were close losses. Texas, they could have easily won in the bowl game, and they could have easily beaten Washington. This was a team that finished 9-4, and you know, generally, I believe that you are what you are. If you're a 9-4 team, you are a 9-4 team. But this really was a team that could have easily won 11. And when you look at the talent level that is at Eugene, you kind of have to scratch your head about how this is happening. And I think what went right for Mike Riley is that he got these guys to play so well. I mean, you have a starting freshman starter at center, a true freshman starter at center, and they overcame what a lot of other coaches would complain about and use it as excuses, whether your quarterback gets hurt or whether you have to start a true freshman at center. And they overcame all those things and went out, and it all started with beating Wisconsin in the opener and just really having a stout defense all year long.
What would you say that maybe some of that deficit in talent level is what ended up being their downfall near the end of the season?
Yeah, I think it's a lot of the depth issues they have, being able to weather the injuries. Even though Vaz was better than Mannion was playing well, you know, losing that rhythm in the offense and having to come back with a new quarterback and then, you know, coming back with Mannion when he got better, which didn't work out, and then going back to Vaz. And, you know, I think that you know, a lot of these things took time to gel, and when injuries happen for teams like Oregon State, it's really hard to weather them, and that's when you see them lose some of these close games at the end.
Washington, another team, like we just said, they played a role in the Pac-12 North race without actually ever being a part of the Pac-12 North race. They finished 7-6 after a overtime loss in the Apple Cup to Washington State, and then a last, you know, right at the end of the fourth quarter, could not hold on as Boise State came back to win 28-26 in the Las Vegas Bowl. Real quickly, you know, we said that the recruiting is going well. I argued they are on the upward trajectory. Let's go ahead and jump to, you know, where do you think they fell short? Why did this team that is recruiting well but can't seem to put it together finish just 7-6?
Well, I think they have real problems along the lines. I think Sarkisian is recruiting very well. I think the great skill players he's bringing in, these highlight players, he's bringing in quarterbacks, he's bringing in receivers, he's bringing in tight ends, he's bringing in defensive backs and some linebackers. But when it comes up to the offensive line and the defensive line, they've really fallen short, and maybe that'll change now bringing in Tosh McCoy, who's, you know, really starting to make a name for himself again at Washington here, bringing in recruits in this cycle. But they couldn't match up with teams like LSU, you know, who beat them 41-3. They couldn't match up with Oregon, who just steamrolled them. USC, one of the few teams USC was able to kind of dominate at the line of scrimmage this year with Washington.
And that's Arizona. Not a good thing.
What's that?
I said that's not a good thing considering no. The line play at USC this year.
Yeah, exactly. So, and then Arizona, with, you know, with its spread offense, was able to really move the ball on Washington well. So, you know, there was just a lot of there's not a lot of great talent on the line. There's not a lot of depth on the lines. And the frontline abilities of the skill position players can only get them so far. And then when you also look at the fact that I think Keith Price really regressed this year as a quarterback in Sarkisian's system, I think it's kind of pointing to a little bit of a schizophrenia on what Sarkisian wants to do offensively. He is a disciple of Norv Turner in that style of offense, and he likes that kind of pro style NFL style, but he also mixes in a lot of pistol and spread and kind of the stuff that Stanford likes to do, but I think they just don't do it as well, and so you end up getting losing your identity, and I think that's where you see them laying eggs against teams like Washington State in a rivalry game and losing that at the end. So I think there's a real issue right now with getting this talent at Washington to play within a coherent system, and I think that's where Sarkisian's in real danger of kind of losing control of this program if he doesn't have a good season next year.
Speaking of offensive schizophrenia, the Cal Golden Bears only beat two FBS teams this year, UCLA and Washington State, finished with 5 straight losses, and then obviously the coaching change that we have mentioned before. That should help change offensive woes. At least that's what Cal fans are hoping, as not only Sonny Dykes, but his offensive coordinator, Tony Franklin, will be coming with him to Cal. Was it just obviously there were the offensive struggles, not what you expected, especially with some of the talent, but it seemed like some of the talent at Cal never seemed to fit in the right places. What exactly happened in your eyes to lead this team that, you know, you weren't expecting them to necessarily contend for the Pac-12 North, but 2-7 in conference play, 3-9 overall wasn't really, I think, meeting expectations either.
Well, I think Jeff Tedford really just reached the point in his career at Cal where I just don't think he saw the forest for the trees. I think he was so caught up in doing things his way and doing things a certain way that I don't think he saw what was happening to his program. And if you look at it, the quarterback, Zach Maynard, as a senior, and he was he's the half-brother of Keenan Allen, as we're always told during the Cal TV games.
Oh, no way! Get out of here!
Yeah.
I never heard that.
Yeah, so the problem is that when you've got a senior quarterback who is clearly underperforming, and let's say midway through the year, Cal was 2-4, what do you have to gain by having that senior quarterback who so far hasn't developed? He's not going to develop. You know, what's the point of keeping him in there? Tedford just didn't want to play any of the other quarterbacks to try to give them a chance to develop, and I think he gave some life into his offense. And you saw that with his running back, Brendan Bigelow. The turning point of the season was probably the Ohio State game. At Ohio State, Cal had a chance to beat the Buckeyes. They ended up losing 35-28. Brendan Bigelow was the kind of the big revelation in that game. In that game, he had something like 161 yards, 4 carries, and 2 touchdowns. He had one of the great highlight runs of the year. And, you know, from my perspective, this is a guy that, you know, you want to start playing, you know, with regularity in offense. Well, he only had something like 38 carries the rest of the year. He had 431 yards in the season and averaged 10 yards per carry. So here's a guy who could have injected some life into your offense, but instead, Tedford, ever the loyalist, went with C.J. Anderson and E.C. Sotelle, who are nice little backs, but don't have the ability of a Bigelow. So this sort of like stilted conservative thinking really permeated Tedford's philosophy this season, and I think this is what killed him overall. He was too afraid to take chances, too afraid to rock the boat, too afraid to go against his normal pattern, and that's what did him in.
What about Washington State? The Apple Cup win was a great way to finish the season. Do you see it carrying any momentum into 2013?
Well, it's funny. There's a lot of hope about Washington State heading into the year because of Michael Beecham. There's even some talk of them taking the next step and maybe making a bowl. But it was a very disappointing season. You not only had the 3-9 record, although there was that salvage of a win by beating Washington. And you know, that's happened in the past with Washington State. I believe the previous coach beat Washington in his first year. The battle to the race to the bottom, so to speak, but that didn't really amount to much. I think, and then you have the big investigation and the departure of Marquise Wilson, and all these things. You were thinking that hopefully that Leach would show some signs of improvement during the first year, and that this would result in jumping off for the next season where he'd start to turn things around. I think there were some signs at times. I think losing to Colorado early was a bad sign. They were never competitive against teams like Oregon and Oregon State or Utah. Played tough against UCLA, but they were crushed by Arizona State before beating Washington. I think that he's going to have to get a few recruiting cycles in to get some good players. I liked his recruiting class last year, but some of these guys probably have to start contributing now. And I do think he does have the right quarterback in place this year. I think Connor Holiday, who I think will sort of be that ideal Leach quarterback, probably more so than Jeff Toole was. So I think there's a chance that if Holiday, you know, has 1 year in that system under his belt, that he makes that big as a junior. And I think that they'll be a much better team next year.
Taking it on to the South Division. Let's go ahead and start with the Bruins. They ended up, of course, winning the South with a very, very big win for the program, 38-28. And even though they finished with the back-to-back losses to Stanford, they had the pretty embarrassing loss to Baylor in the Holiday Bowl. Not necessarily embarrassing, excuse me. I just felt like Baylor dominated that game. But, you know, after that USC game, they're 9-2, 6-2 in conference play. They sort of lock up the South Division. Do you consider it as the season as a whole, or can you sort of draw a line at everything up to that point and say it was a successful season and then chalk up the end to, I don't know, lack of motivation or what's I'm having trouble sort of now looking back at the entire season, because if you talk to me in mid-November, I'm thinking that UCLA is just, this is the best possible season they could have asked for.
I think it's a wildly successful season for them, even though they finished 9-5. And here's why. You just look at the numbers and you might come away with thinking that they had a disappointing finish and that the season wasn't so hot. But let's consider this. They started a redshirt freshman quarterback. They started a freshman at center. They started two other freshmen on the line, including a true freshman. They started three freshmen on the offensive line, and they started a fourth guy on the offensive line, Xavier Suafilo, who was a true sophomore coming back after 2 years from Warren Mission. So you had four players on the offensive line who really hadn't played football in college to any extent in the last 2 years. So you had an entirely new offensive line. You had a new freshman quarterback. You had a bunch of new players in the receiving core. And this was a very good offense. You know, this was an offense that went out and was amongst the leaders in the country you know, for much of the year. It averaged almost 470 yards of offense per game. And this was a team that could score, you know, against, if not against the great defenses, it scored very well against the decent defenses, which is what you have to do. It scored 66 in Arizona and 44 on Washington State and put up 38 on USC and put 36 in Nebraska. So this is a team that could score despite having a lot of youth. And I think the most important thing that happened this year, and this is what people who maybe are on the outside looking in at UCLA don't realize, is that Jim Mora really changed the culture. That was the most important thing that had to happen at UCLA, was the culture change, even more so than that, just the fact there was a coaching change. The culture needed to change into a different style, sort of the same thing that Harbaugh did at Stanford. There had to be more of a toughness. There had to be less of a sense of entitlement for these players. There's kind of this sense that when you go to Westwood, it's such a luxurious place. You're a stone's throw from Bel Air. You tend to get soft there. You tend to become a finesse player if you're a tough guy in high school. So I think Jim Mora came in and he said, look, we're not going to have any of these old traditions where we're a soft team. We're going to be a tough team now. And I think he went a long way towards establishing that, and they almost went to the Rose Bowl.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's very true. If that field goal connects and they go to overtime, maybe you beat Stanford, and then a Rose Bowl against Wisconsin, who knows what happens there, could be very different, and of course change the tone of the finish. So you're saying UCLA win the Pac-12 North, win Pac-12 South, you are putting them as a team right up there, you know, to defend that title heading into 2013?
Yeah, this is a team on the rise without a doubt. I mean, you have almost everybody back on offense. You don't have, you lose Jonathan Franklin, but they've got a lot of talent there at running back. But you got Brett Hundley, who is another future first round pick, excellent freshman quarterback, should contend for the Heisman one day. So I really like their future.
All right, moving on to USC. I'll just go ahead and if you could identify the most troubling aspect of USC's season, what would you think it would be?
Well, there's a lot to list, and it's really hard to find the most troubling. I think the number one would be the inability of Kiffin to take this sort of unique level of talent on offense to use it to its full capability. And I think I can recall discussing with some of my blog cohorts and you guys after the Syracuse game when USC won 42-29, 13-point win. And I remember saying, you know, something didn't quite look right with USC's offense. And I think somebody told me that I was being spoiled. And I said, well, I don't know. Something doesn't look right. And the next week they lost to Stanford 21-14. And it turns out there really was something wrong schematically with what Lane Kiffin was trying to do on offense. I think USC just lacks an identity on offense, and they continue to lack an identity on offense. They pretty much are a grab bag of whatever he decides to do in any one week, and they don't do it very well, whatever it is they decide to do. And whatever they do well is usually a result of some incredible playmakers actually taking things into their own hands. So he had a fourth-year starting senior quarterback, two incredible receivers who were first-round talents, four or five starters back on the offensive line, 2,000-yard rushers, a running back, everyone knows the tale. And I think it just is incredible failure at getting all these guys to play together, losing five of the last six, with the real embarrassment coming against Georgia Tech. I just don't think there's any one thing that you can point to that he did wrong. I think you just have to point to the head coach.
Moving on to Arizona State, what was your takeaway from Todd Graham's first season with the Sun Devils?
I was really surprised at how, that they were a decent team. I really thought this would be a team that would take a considerable step back. The previous year, they had Brock Osweiler, who I thought was a very good quarterback, and I thought this was going to be a team that was going to take some time to gel. They came right back in with Taylor Kelly, and he had a great season for his first year as a sophomore. Here's a guy, he had 3,000 yards passing, 29 touchdowns passing, only 9 interceptions, a pretty healthy passer rating. I thought the offense played really well. They averaged 38 points a game, and they beat some teams I didn't think they'd beat. They beat Illinois like so handily. I know Illinois is not great, but they beat them handily early on. They gave Missouri a battle, and then they beat Utah, who at the time, you know, people thought would be pretty decent. So this was a team that I thought surprised and overachieved, and I think that Graham laid a pretty good foundation for the next few years. They have Taylor Kelly coming back the next couple seasons, and I think if he keeps recruiting well, then I think they've got a chance to challenge for the Pac-12 South.
Now, from there to Arizona, and the Wildcats, they after the 39-36 victory over USC, which featured just, you know, that incredible dual wide receiver, you know, performances with Marquise Lee, but then also Austin Hill holding up each team, it seemed, you know, just like one of the, you hear about running backs that put on these single man performances. Austin Hill finished with over 1,300 yards receiving, 11 touchdowns on the season. But Arizona, as far as the expectations in the first season, I think they met them. I mean, you know, if they have an overtime loss to Stanford, they have a 3-point loss to Oregon State, and, you know, disappointing to lose to Arizona State at the end of the season, but still, you know, they finish 8-5 with a come-from-behind bowl win, with the exception of, you know, some defensive issues that seem to follow Rich Rod around from time to time. Yeah, I think this was a great first year for Arizona. You agree?
I totally agree. I mean, this is a team that, and he was a little bit lucky that I think to have Matt Scott there, who was a perfect fit for his offense, just kind of plug and play when he got there. But this is a team that crushed Oklahoma State. When they laid eggs, they laid some big eggs. I mean, they got crushed by Oregon, they got crushed by UCLA. But like you said, could have beat Oregon State, could have beat Stanford. In that rivalry game with Arizona State, could have beaten them. This is a team that scratched and clawed its way to some pretty good wins, and then really was just a fun team, an explosive team to watch. I think that the defense will be better this year. They have 10 guys coming back on defense this year, so I think, you know, I think there'll be some improvement. I think there will be some issues finding that quarterback to replace Matt Scott, and that's one of the things they didn't get to use a lot of this year was their backup quarterback. B.J. Danker was the backup this year, and he didn't get a lot of time. But I do think that when you look at Rich Rodriguez's track record on offense, you have to think their offense is going to be pretty solid. And if defense improves, you have to think that there's a good chance that their record is just as good, if not better, next year, especially if he recruits well. And I think Rich Rod had a lot to prove. And I think he proved it, that that he is a good coach. And sometimes you just need the right fit. And I don't think he was the right fit at Michigan. I think there was a lot of resistance to what he was trying to do there in the institution. I think Arizona, a lot less resistance. And I think that they embraced him. And I think that he was perfect fit for them. And I think he has a chance to really go on a good run at Arizona.
Now, moving on to Utah, a team we mentioned earlier, you know, we thought that a victory over Utah meant a lot earlier in the season, but at the end of the season, we look back, they got a great draw as far as the conference schedule goes, because their out-of-division opponents from the north were California and Washington State. Those are two of their wins, and then their only other conference victory is 42-35 over Colorado. What happened at Utah that, you know, led to them not exactly meeting expectations?
Well, I think what happened with them was what happens a lot in the Pac-12. In the Pac-12, you really need to have, to compete, you really need a good quarterback and an experienced quarterback to sort of, you know, help yourself compete against all the teams. And I think you saw that at Arizona. You know, no matter what, Arizona had a senior quarterback who had been through the battle, and he was able to kind of get them going. And you see that around. You are seeing some young quarterbacks, obviously, contributing early because of their great talent and these great systems. But when you have a guy like Jordan Wynn for Utah, who was gimpy and couldn't get beyond the first couple of games, and then they bring in John Hayes, who hadn't played much, and then Travis Wilson, who is a true freshman, very talented quarterback for Utah, but they had to go with the true freshman. And when you start a true freshman at quarterback, It's one thing if you're a true freshman playing for USC with a lot of talent around you, or at Oregon where you've got this incredible scheme and some talent around you. But when you're a true freshman at Utah, it's a little bit tougher. And Travis Wilson did a commendable job, but I think in the end, this was sort of a mulligan season for Whittingham. And I think that once this guy develops, once Travis Wilson develops in that system, it's going to be an interesting program. And also another thing to keep in mind was that they had a lot of other coaching turnovers that really affected, you know, how they played.
Yeah, and Travis Wilson, for those who don't know, is the 6'6", 230-pound behemoth of a quarterback. And do you see things, like you said, it sounds like, you know, as he develops, you think that could be a very interesting offense. How do you see Utah using him, and is he the kind of player where you know, maybe you try and base the offense around him?
Yeah, I think so. He's sort of like a Blake Bell type player, or maybe like a Colin Kaepernick, just a real kind of giraffe out there. He can run. He's got a really strong arm. I think he's got an NFL arm. And I think that they realize right away that he just kind of, his talent sort of jumps out at you. So I think to Whittingham's credit, he recognized that, hey, look, John Hayes is a senior. We have nothing to gain by developing him when we're already kind of struggling as a team. We're going to have to ride this guy, Travis Wilson, for the next few years because he's our future. So let's get him up to speed. Let's let him go through some of these battles right now. And he won a few battles. Right? He had some pretty good games in the Pac-12, and those are things. I mean, that'll serve him well later on. He had 311 passing yards against Arizona toward the end of the season. He had 220 passing yards against UCLA and a close loss. So these are things that'll really pay off for them in year two and year three for Travis Wilson.
And bringing us home, really. Really disappointing season at Colorado. Didn't even beat Sacramento State. Only victory was that Washington State 1-point win. Give me something uplifting about Colorado in this season or moving forward.
Well, like you said, this was definitely one of the worst Pac-12 teams in recent memory. I would rate this along with the Washington State team of 2008. As probably one of the worst Pac-12 teams I've ever seen. To be down, I think, 42-0 to Fresno State at the half or something like that. I forget what the number was, but that was probably the nadir of the season, and that was only the third game. So there's obviously very few positives in this. I think one of the positives was that this team didn't really quit on the coach. I think that they fought hard. They fought hard against Utah, and they obviously scraped out that win against Washington State. But I think the big hope going forward is that they finally hired, I think, a proven college coach, Mike McIntyre, coming from San Jose State. He did an incredible job at San Jose State, and I think that bringing in a college coach who has shown that he can win at a place where it's not easy to win, where things aren't handed to you on a silver platter. McIntyre comes into Colorado in a situation, he's a fairly young coach. He's shown some success at a place where, you don't have a great recruiting base. You've got to compete with a lot of teams around you that are overshadowing you. So when he comes to Colorado now, he's got a situation where he's not going to expect things to be handed to him. He's going to grind away, and he's going to try to overachieve, based on what his expectations are. And this is a situation where Colorado has great facilities. They've got a great tradition, or not a great tradition, but a solid tradition. And I think that McIntyre is a guy to do it for them. And I think he's going to recruit well, and I think he's going to get them playing hard. And I think, above all, they're not going to be kind of this team adrift, which I think they were under Embry. They just seem to kind of go out there and just kind of go through the motions. So I think bringing in Mike McIntyre is really going to be the key.
Now, we're going to send you out of here on this. Looking at the Pac-12 moving forward, give me your handful of teams, your Power Five, the teams that you are keeping a close eye on as possible contenders heading into 2013.
Well, it starts with Oregon and Stanford. Those two are the definite, I'd say, co-favorites in the Pac-12, and they're both in the North, and I think it's interesting because no one thought that the North would sort of be the marquee division, but right now it looks like they are the marquee teams in the marquee division. So I think you got to look at Oregon and Stanford as the overwhelming favorites to win the Pac-12 title. Whoever wins that game between those two will most likely, be the Pac-12 champion. I think UCLA in the South, they're only getting better. UCLA is recruiting very well right now. They're going to bring in more talent. Brett Hundley is a year older, a year better in that system. I think overall, talent-wise, they're better. I think you have to look at Oregon State bringing back some key players on defense and on offense. They bring back their quarterback. So I think they're going to be a force to reckon with. And I think if Arizona can find a quarterback, I really like the dangerous kind of nature that they bring in the South. They could kind of surprise people in the South if Rich Rodriguez can find a quarterback. I think he's recruiting well as also and bringing in the kind of players that we're used to see him feature at West Virginia, kind of these underrated three-star Smurf-like athletes who can run like the wind. So I think they're going to be a real danger in the South Division. So I'd say Oregon, Arizona, UCLA, Stanford, and Oregon State will probably be the premier five in the Pac-12 in 2013.
He is Chris Houston. You can follow him on Twitter at Heisman Pundit. Chris, I really appreciate you taking the time to review the Pac-12. We've now officially closed the book on it, and we can start getting ready for signing day and spring practice.
Sounds great, man. We'll see you around.
Remember, you can get all of the Eye on College Football podcasts on iTunes for free, and be sure to go to cbssports.com where you will find a link in the blog post of this podcast to all of the other What Went Right, What Went Wrong podcasts. We'll be back at you later this week with the ACC and the Big East. For Chris Houston, I'm Chip Patterson. Thanks so much for listening.